So it's September 26, 2014, in Golokadam, Germany. And we're going to be meditating on taking shelter of the internal energy. Question: what do we do when we need shelter? When we're confused, when we have some problem, when we look for happiness, where do we go? Some people eat, they call it comfort food. Some people just, it doesn't make us go to sleep. Some people go to their family, their friends. Some people go to entertainment. When we want to fulfill our desires, what do we do? Okay, I want to fulfill my desires. Let me use my intelligence. Let me use my creativity. Let me get angry. Let me use my power and authority. Or let me use my surrender. What do we do? We talk about taking shelter. Where do we go for shelter? Why is Vikram standing at the door? Come in, come in, come in. So we have to take shelter somewhere. Prabhupada makes this point many times. He talks about the astronauts, how they go up to the moon, wherever they go, but they can't stay there. Just like recently, Vikram and I had a 13-hour plane ride. And, you know, after a while, it doesn't matter how nice the plane is. You want to get off that plane. You know, there's no shelter just flying in the sky. We all want shelter. Now, Prabhupada makes the interesting point here that the external energy is also Krishna. Krishna and his energy are none different. But when you take shelter of the external energy, it's not very much fun. It's like the government runs prisons and the government runs universities. But if you take shelter of the government through the prison, it's not very enjoyable. You didn't mind that. So this is, you know, where do we want to have shelter? Do we want to have shelter under the internal energy or the external energy? And I find it fascinating that Krishna uses this word shelter in the Bhagavad Gita for ahankara ashrita and kama ashrita, to take shelter of lust, to take shelter of the ahankara. We were talking about humility, of not defending our ego. Now, we can defend ourself, that's fine. Our real self, we can even defend our body. It's not that you have to stand there and let somebody shoot you. But we don't need to defend our pride and our ego. But generally, that's what we take shelter of. I am the Lord of everything. And does that really bring us happiness? All right, let's look at this internal energy. Is this internal energy? So, just Krishna is the same as his energy. So Radha and Krishna are actually the same. They are one person. Again, it's not that there are two gods. Of course, we're very unique in the world. Now, most of the world's religions talk about just one god who's male. And nowadays it's becoming popular to say there's one god who's female. It's becoming quite popular. But we're saying that God is one, but although God is one, God is both male and female, Radha and Krishna. And Radharani is a direct transformation of Krishna's love. This is one of the illustrations from one of our children's books. What does Krishna's love look like? It looks like Srimati Radharani. She's the energy of love and the energy of pleasure. I really like what Uttama Sokapu was saying this morning in class, that the reason that material energy means suffering is that without love, there's no question of happiness. It's Prabhupada gives the example of the fish out of water. I used to be in that drama. You know, the fish comes out of water, and I was Maya Devi. Maya Devi gives the fish, you know, jewelry and money and a nice partner and a beautiful house. But the fish doesn't have any water. It can't breathe. So what is our water? It's love. And of course, what passes in the material world for love is not generally so. So therefore, Radharani is both the transformation of Krishna's love and the pleasure potency as identical with him. So we're going to focus on this verse. This is the great souls are under the protection of the internal energy. Sometimes people say Radharani is not mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, but this diving prakritin, this is Srimati Radharani. So why should we do this? Why should we change our shelter? Just like sometimes people move, huh? They move from one house to another, or they move from one country to another. You often, when I tell people I live in Hawaii, they say, oh, I want to go there. I remember though one time I was doing a lot of service in New Zealand. So I was traveling from Hawaii to New Zealand, and I asked one elderly couple ahead of me in the line for the plane, so why are you going to New Zealand? And they said, oh, we heard it's very beautiful there. So we were already in Hawaii. And I said, well, it's not as beautiful as Hawaii. So, why should we move? Why should we change our shelter? We've been under the shelter of the Ahankara, under the shelter of Durga Devi, for a very long time, as we were hearing this morning, from time immemorial, without being able to trace it out. So if you lived in a house for a very, very long time, why should you change, right? I mean, even if it's falling apart, even if your house is falling apart, you find, used to be, I don't see this so much anymore, but it used to be that families would live in the same house generation after generation, right? Somebody would live in the same house, their father, their grandfather, their great-grandfather, their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather had lived in, but that's not so common anymore. Now people are moving all the time. But still, you can understand if somebody was living in an old house, they lived there for a long time, they're comfortable, huh? You find this sometimes when a person dies, they have so much stuff in their house. So much they've accumulated to be comfortable in their house. If you're going to move, such a big deal. So we may think that. We may think, if I have to transfer my shelter from Durga to Radharani, I'll be so much trouble. So uncomfortable. Why should I do it? And getting rid of my false ego. It's comfortable. Maybe it's kicking me all the time, but it's comfortable. So we're going to look at what are the benefits. Why should we change to Radharani's shelter? And how do we do it? What does it mean? You know, in the Hare Krishna movement, we're always saying, take shelter of Krishna. Take shelter of Radharani. Take shelter. What does that mean? So first thing we're going to look at is, what are the benefits? What happens when we take shelter of Radharani? I'm going to be quizzing you on this too. Sorry, I was a teacher for a long time, so. So the one benefit is we get protection. Prabhupada's saying here, although we have got Krishna's qualities, still we sometimes fall down, so we require protection. This reminds me of when a devotee went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, sometimes we fall into Maya. Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna. But we need protection, isn't it? Is it easy to always remember Krishna and always stay out of trouble? Which was so cool. You were talking about how fortunate we are that we're not engaged in sinful activities. Oh, but for many people, that's not easy. I think for those of us who live in a temple ashram or only do service in the movement, it's so easy you don't even think about it. But it's not such an easy thing in modern society to be protected just from the four sinful activities. What, to speak of being protected from things like anger? I mean, that can happen even if you're living... I mean, I'm sure it doesn't happen very often, but it can happen even if you're living in the Brahmacharya ashram, right? Even great sages in the Shastra become angry, or they can become lusty, or they can become greedy. We've seen this. So if we want protection, and some intelligence, would that be nice to have some intelligence? So this is always a question. We get this question over and over. What do I do? What do I do? Of course, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes this sort of vacillating as a symptom of unsteady bhakti. Do I get married? Do I not get married? Do I live in India in the Dham? Or do I live in Germany? You know, what do I do? What do I do? What service do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And we get intelligence. When we have Radharani shelter, then we know what to do. Of course, Krishna even says that of Sattvagun. He says in Sattvagun, you can distinguish what's religion and what's irreligion. What's beneficial and what's harmful. So many times we can't, you know, what do I do? What do I do? We were in Munich the other day, and one devotee was taking some of the kids to her house. So there was one of the kids was there, and we were saying, you should go. She said, should I go? Should I not go? Should I go? Should I not go? And her mother said, she takes an hour to decide what to eat. Because we can't see the results of our decisions, right? You can't. It's like we're deciding like this all the time, isn't it? Do I do this or do I do that? So when we take shelter of Radharani, then we can understand. Oh, this decision will be beneficial for me, and this decision will be harmful for me. This decision will help me come closer to Krishna, and this will take me away from my spiritual life. And then to reach perfection. To reach perfection. So that's not so easy. Prabhupada says in the fourth canto that if you're as serious and sincere as Dhruva Maharaj, you can go back to Godhead in one life. And when I read that, I say, forget about me. What was he doing? Breathing once every 30 days or something? How could I be that sincere and that serious? I liked how you were saying, you know, that if we fail in bhakti, we get to go to heaven, which is the ultimate goal of most religionists. That's their top goal. And for us, it's like, oh no, back in heaven again. But if we're under the shelter of Radharani, then we can reach perfection. We don't have to settle for going to heaven or, you know, taking birth again on the earth planet. Prabhupada said, do not take your birth over and over again in this Kali Yuga. But we can attain perfection. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if we have Radharani's feet, we can very easily get Krishna's lotus feet. So how wonderful to get Krishna's lotus feet. His ruby-like toenails are so bright that when he puts his lotus feet on a footstool, the effulgence from his toenails washes out all of the jeweled colors on the footstool. And his lotus feet are so soft and delicate. And how do we get those lotus feet from Radharani's lotus feet? Then another benefit is that we can make fast advancement. So this is another question we get all the time. How do I advance faster? Of course, sometimes people want to know how they can advance more slowly. May I ask why you lovely ladies are sitting where you can't see the show? Is there some reason why you're sitting where you can't see it? You can't see it? You can? Oh, that's pretty good. Wow. You guys have great peripheral vision. Okay. So I did have a case where a devotee contacted me, somebody who talks to me regularly, and said, oh, my devotional service is so dry. My chanting is dry. Everything's dry. Talking to him for about a half an hour. And finally, It came out that he went to Krishna and he said, go easy with me, okay? Let's go really slowly. I said, no. I said, no wonder it's dry. Of course, now people are afraid. People are afraid. They're afraid. They're afraid that if things go very quickly, that means like Krishna's going to beat them up. That he's going to take away all their money, you know, their wife's going to die, their car's going to burst into flames, the mob will put a, you know, price on their head or something like that. Because sometimes we think quick advancement, Krishna has to take away all of our attachments, and the way he's going to take all of our attachments is by like pulling them out of your hands and burning them. Now, it is true that he sometimes does that. That is true. But if you think about a good parent, so, you know, if one child is hitting his brother over the head with a toy fire truck, now you don't immediately take it away. You say, please stop hitting your brother over the head with the toy fire truck. And you only take it away if the child keeps doing it. And if after you take it away, the child, give me my toy, then you may give it away to charity. But you don't do that immediately, yes? And we're just ordinary people. We're ordinary people with so many flaws, and still, we say something nicely the first time. Yes? Yes? Anybody here take drastic action immediately? No. They don't usually use the atom bombs first. Yes? So why do we think Krishna's going to use the atom bombs first? Now, of course, if you go to Nrisimhadev and talk to him about getting rid of your anarchas, that's something else. If you go to Nrisimhadev and say, I really want to advance quickly, can you please get rid of all my anarchas? Well, what to say? But if you go to Radharani, that's a whole different story. So if you go to Radharani, I want to advance quickly, I want to get rid of all my anarchas, it will be very sweet. If you are cooperative, you know, if we're cooperative. So if we're cooperative and we're willing to deal with the sweetness, then we will be dealt with sweetness. It's only when we're not cooperative and we're stubborn that things get a little strong if we keep praying to advance. Does that make sense to everybody? So advancing quickly doesn't have to be some sort of torture thing. Krishna doesn't want to torture us. He's not sadistic. Krishna would like things to be as sweet as possible. You know, I'm sure he gets a little frustrated. It's like, oh, I'm trying to deal with this person sweetly for the last 5 years on this, and they keep telling me they want to advance. Okay, nothing else left to do. Have to do surgery. They wouldn't take the medicine. So when we take Radharani shelter, we can advance very, very quickly. She will very sweetly and gently show us what we need to deal with. And if we respond to that nicely, then we will advance quickly. Okay, so what happens when we take Radharani shelter? Who can tell me? I did tell you you'd be tested, right? What do we get?
Protection.
What else? Quick advancement, which is right on this slide, because I stupidly don't have a blank slide after this one. I don't want to go to the next topic. And
you get intelligence.
Intelligence. And yes.
Happiness.
Yes, certainly, although that wasn't on the list. And what else? Two more. Yes.
Achieve perfection.
And we get?
Krishna's lotus feet.
Krishna's lotus feet. Very good. So are we interested?
Yes.
Would you like anybody here? Well, who wants protection? Who would like to advance quickly and sweetly? Who would like Krishna's lotus feet? Who would like intelligence? All right. There we go. We ready? How to do it? Okay. How do we do it? Well, it's very nice we can take up this mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. You know, it doesn't have to be something, esoteric. It's very simple. And why is that? Because, as Rupa Goswami explains in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Krishna's quality of compassion is personified in Srimati Radharani. And when Krishna takes on this quality of compassion, he comes as Mahaprabhu. So this preaching mission is very much the mood of Srimati Radharani. You know, in ordinary life, in ordinary life. If you have something, you generally don't want to share it. I mean, unless you have a whole lot. Right? And especially women, they don't want to share their men, generally. Like Mahaprabhu, he cursed those girls to marry a man who would have 4 co-wives, right? An old man with 4 co-wives. Ah, okay, we'll give you the offerings. But that's not the mood in the spiritual world. Radharani does not have the mood that Krishna is mine and all mine, and I don't want anyone else to have him. It's not her mood. Her mood is I want everyone else to have him. And Krishna Das Kavi says that Radharani feels 100 times happier when the other gopis are with Krishna than when she's with Krishna. Now this is the general mood. You know that, and it's Krishna Das Kaviraj explains that Krishna is very pleased when he sees that the gopis. Is there a problem? Is it okay? That Krishna is very pleased when he sees that the gopis are trying to get other people to be with Krishna. So Srimati Radharani has the mood that let everybody come and be with Krishna. Let everybody come to the spiritual world. And we get her shelter by taking up her mood and assisting her in her mission. Getting into this mood. This is why we're preachers. This is why Krishna says that no one is as dear to him as the preacher. And of course, there's so many ways to preach. Prabhupada says that this movement is not narrow or stereotyped. Well, there's so many ways to preach Krishna consciousness. Of course, we have our main ways, which are prasadam, book distribution, and the holy name. But there's unlimited ways in which we can bring Krishna consciousness to the people of the world. And of course, we take shelter of Srimati Radharani in the Hare Krishna mantra. And this quote is one way that Srila Prabhupada defines the Hare Krishna mantra. I am now embarrassed with my material service. Is serving Maya embarrassing? Is it embarrassing? Serving Maya. Is serving Maya embarrassing? Very. I remember at Bhaktivedanta Hospital, once I was there for some treatment and I was very sick and I was vomiting. And I turned to the devotee doctor and I said, it's so embarrassing to have a material body. You know, everything that comes out of this body is embarrassing and shameful. And what to speak of our bad qualities. I mean, could you imagine if we had to put the contents of our mind up publicly for our friends? You know, how embarrassing. Just one day's worth of thoughts. You know. Would be so embarrassing. I'm embarrassed by having served the material energy. The material energy induces us to do things that we feel ashamed of. That we feel ashamed of even for ourselves. Krishna, let me come and serve you. So, of course, we serve in Mahaprabhu's mission under the instructions of Guru and the six Goswamis. Not just whimsically. I appreciated what you said this morning that there are so many apasampradayas. You know, just, I'm going to serve Lord Chaitanya's movement like this, even though it's not narrow or stereotyped, and even though there's an infinite number of ways to serve Mahaprabhu's movement, it has to be within the framework of Guru and the six Goswamis. And of course, without the six Goswamis, how would we even know anything about Radharani? I mean, she's referred to very obliquely, very implicitly in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. She's not revealed directly. The place where she's revealed directly is in the works of the Goswamis. So the Goswamis, especially Rupa Sanatan, Raghunath Das Goswami, they wrote so many books detailing the activities of Krishna and his associates, detailing the qualities of Srimati Radharani, of course Krishna Das Kaviraj also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which came from the diaries of Swarup Damodar and Raghunath Das Goswami. You know, you can still go to the place at Chamakund, where right by the Sangram, between Chamakund and Radhakund, where Raghunath Das Goswami would meet every day with Krishnadas Kaviraj, where he was writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. So to take shelter of Srimati Radharani, we take the guidance of the Goswamis, right? Rupa Goswami is giving us his whole book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Here's how to act in devotional service to take Radharani's shelter. Now, whenever I show this quote, people argue with me, so please don't argue with me. It is Prabhupada's quote, and I know he says different things at different places, so I'm not saying this is the only quote, but it's one of them. And I think the fact that Srila Prabhupada says different things in different places, and the fact that the process of bhakti is described somewhat differently by different acharyas in different places, simply shows us that this is ultimately a very individual process. That although we can describe the process in general ways that are applicable to everyone, our philosophy that each of us is a unique, eternal, individual soul is not just something realized in some far-off place at some far-off time, but it's something that all of us access all the time from the beginning. And therefore, each of us have a slightly different path within the framework of Shastra, Sadhu, and Guru. So here Prabhupada, in his purport to Gauranga Balite Habe, says, so Narottama Das Thakur is giving us the direction how we can reach the highest perfectional stage of associating with Radha and Krishna. By surrendering to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu will be pleased, and by his being pleased, we shall be free from material desires. And when material desires are no more, then we shall be able to enter Vrindavana. And after entering Vrindavana, when we are eager to serve the six Goswamis, then we can reach the platform to understand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So I like this because it's very simple. Serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How do you do that? Preach. Spread Krishna consciousness. Share it with others. Does that mean you have to go out and have programs for 200,000 people? Well, sure, you can do that. But it also means you can just share Krishna consciousness with one person. You can share Krishna consciousness with your friends. Right? But in some way, bring others to Krishna consciousness. By doing that, Lord Nityananda will be pleased. And Lord Nityananda, as the original guru, will help us to free ourselves from our anarthas, at which point we can enter into Vrindavan and understand the works of the Goswamis, which brings us to Radha and Krishna. So, of course, understanding what we should do, we talked in a very general way about what we should do. Now we're going to go into some specifics. And to do that, we look at the next verse after Mahatmanas Tumam Partha, which is Satatam Kirtayam Tumam.
Satatam Kirtayam Tumam Jatam Tashadirabhata Namatam Tashadirabhata Nishadirabhata Upachati.
So always chanting the glories of Krishna. So this, of course, can mean the Hare Krishna mantra, it can mean the Shastra, it can mean prasadam, in so many ways. And taking great vows, you know, our vows of no intoxication, no illicit sex, no meat eating and gambling are pretty great vows for the modern time, you know. Chanting 16 rounds, 3 Gayatris, that's a pretty big vow. We're not talking about, you don't have to go into the Himalayas and stand on your toes for 100 years. If you even just take a vow, I'm not going to criticize any Vaishnava, that's a pretty great vow. I'm not going to defend my false ego for 3 days or something, that's a pretty great vow. And always offering obeisances and always worshiping Krishna. So now we're going to go through some details of how we can, in very specific ways, take shelter of Srimati Radharani. So one way, of course, is in the deity form, and we're very fortunate here to have Radha Madan Mohan, and some of us perhaps worship deities of Radharani in our own homes, so we can take shelter of the deity form by just chanting for her and just seeing her. She's very happy just when we come, as we say, to take darshan, just to come and see her. What to speak of those who can dress or decorate her. But even one can come to the temple and bring a flower, bring some little rice, bring some incense, bring something for Radharani.
So, and then allow me to know Krishna. To know Krishna is not Krishna, Radha is Krishna. Krishna is not intimate. Krishna is Radha, his father. So you have to echo Krishna to Radha.
So this is another way we can take Radharani's shelter, is by praying to her. There's one place where Prabhupada says, if you ask a man for something, he may not give, but if you can convince his lady friend, then he will have to give. So Krishna is also like that.
We should watch the Radharani, but that is not difference. It is not offering directly one flower to Krishna. You just put it in the hands of Radha. My mother, Radha, Jagannatha, if you kindly take this flower and offer to them. Oh, Radha, oh, you have brought the flower.
Prabhupada's so sweet, isn't he? He's so sweet. Prabhupada's mood, huh? So we can take shelter of Radharani like that. Radharani, here's a flower for Krishna. Please give this to Krishna. And she says, oh, you brought a flower? I know one second generation girl who was telling me how she had this dream that she came to the presence of Radharani, and Radharani said, so what have you brought? And she looked and she had nothing in her hands. So to give something to Radharani. Then we can also hear of Radharani's qualities. So this is, of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. How she's bathed in luster and compassion and youth. I always find this very interesting, that Radharani's ornaments are the symptoms of ecstasy. This is all from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oh, the sattvika bhavs. So it's quite interesting, because Krishnadas Kaviraj defines love as wanting the happiness of the person you love, and lust as wanting your own happiness. So if I have a relationship with you for the purpose of getting something from you for my own happiness, that is lust. We all understand that, right? If I'm dealing with you because I'm hoping you're going to give me money, or I'm hoping that you're going to give me food, or I'm hoping you're going to give me something for myself, that's lust. And we feel very uncomfortable with that, don't we? Oh, you're having a relationship with me just to get something from me. We know that's not real love. It often it comes disguised as love, you know. And the more it comes disguised as love, and the more it's lust, the more ugly it is. The more somebody says, oh, I love you, and the more they want to get something from you, the greater the difference is, the more revolting it is. So how is it that the ornaments of Radharani is her own happiness? And of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying for this. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up? When will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? And in expanding on that verse, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Prema dana bina vyartha daridra jivana dasa kori beta mori deha prema dana. So, prema dana. Dana is? Anybody know? Wealth. Prema dana. Prema dana vina. Vina is without. Prema dana vina vyartha. Y'all know what an artha is? An artha is? Also wealth, a goal, something that's valuable. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So, viartha, it's useless. An artha is something valuable. Viartha is useless. So, prema dana bina. If you don't have the wealth of love, viartha, useless. Daridra, what's a daridra? Everybody should know what daridra means.
Poor.
Jivana is? Life. So if you don't have the wealth of prema, your life is useless and poor. You're very poor. So you may have a BMW and a Jaguar, and, you know, but your life is poor and useless. Dasakori, I want to be your servant. Like we apply for a job, you go for a job application. Dasakori betanmoy. Betan means a salary. So sometimes there's a debate in ISKCON, should devotees get salaries? So Mahaprabhu is asking for a salary. He is. He's saying, Dasa Kori Betan Mori. I want to be your, I'm applying for the job of servant and I want the salary. Deha Prema Dana. You please give me this dana of prema. Now what's interesting is that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati translates this verse as ecstasy as my pay. Although it says prema dana, love, the wealth of love as my betan, as my salary, Bhaktisiddhanta translates it as ecstasy. I want to get paid with ecstasy. So why would the devotee want to get paid with ecstasy? And why would the ecstasies of Radharani be her ornaments when real love is you forget about your own happiness? So I want us to think about this very, very deeply. What is the greatest gift that you can give another living being?
Attention.
Okay.
Love.
But how do you show that love? What demonstrates that you really love someone?
Ecstasy.
The ecstasy at but caused by that person. But why do people keep dogs? And there's many reasons, but one reason people keep dogs is the dog is so happy to see you. You know, your wife and children may not be so happy to see you. You come home from work, your wife may not even notice that you come home. Or if you come home, if she does notice, she says, oh, I'm so glad you're here. The toilet's been broken all day. Right? And your children are, oh, you're home? Oh, I guess I got to turn off the video game now. Right? But the dogs, we used to have these slugs. Do you know what slugs are? They're like snails without shells. They're really gross things. You understand what a snail is? And they eat the plants in your garden. So we had these slugs in Detroit in our garden, and they were eating all of our vegetables. And I tried so many things to get rid of them. So finally I read something that if you have ducks, they'll eat the slugs. So I went and I bought some ducks. And they did eat the slugs. Unfortunately, after they ate all the slugs, they were looking for more, and they would step on them. They didn't eat the plants, but they'd step on the plants. I had to give them to a zoo after a while. But anyway, it was very interesting with these ducks. The children and I fed them. My husband never fed them. He didn't do anything for them. But somehow they got really excited whenever he would come home. And they could hear the sound of his particular vehicle. We lived on a corner. And when his vehicle was halfway down the road, before it even turned the corner, they would get so excited and they would go over to the gate. Quack, 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 quack. And he'd pull in the driveway and he'd get out of the car and they'd be practically flying away. Quack, 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 quack. And they would get so excited. And he was always thrilled. He'd say, wow, these ducks really love me. So what does it mean when you love somebody? It means that that person is a source of happiness for you. That just seeing that person makes you happy. Right? Isn't that we want people who want to be with us, right? We want people that just by our presence they feel happy. So that gives Krishna the greatest pleasure. What do we have to offer him? Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashtami paritatmaha. A little water? I mean, it's his water. A flower? It's his flower. I mean, it's nice to give him water and flowers. But that's not so exciting. What's exciting is that we're excited. If we're like, oh, yeah, there's Krishna. Hi, Krishna. Oh, there's Krishna. Oh, there's Krishna. Oh, there's Krishna. That thrills him. Wow, somebody loves me. This is the ornaments of Radharani, and we can meditate on the ecstasies of Radharani, which are totally selfless. And of course, we can meditate on Krishna's Leela with Radharani. Radharani glorifying Krishna's flute? So we often hear about the wonders of Krishna's flute, how it melts stone, right? It makes the Jamuna stop flowing. Things mobile become immobile. Things immobile become mobile. So here's Srimati Radharani meditating on Krishna's flute. Now, it's not only Krishna's flute that does that, but Radharani's singing also does that. Radharani was feeling, what is the use of anything if I cannot see Krishna? This is the sunyaitam jagat sarvam govindavirahiname. If I can't see Krishna, the universe is void. Prabhupada says this is transcendental illusion. How can the universe be void? It's full of so many things. But if Krishna is not there, it's void. So here she says, better to be deaf if I can't hear Krishna. Can anybody find where Krishna is here? He's hiding. Can you see?
Behind the tree?
Yeah. Krishna loves, by the way, to hide and listen to his devotees talk about him. Don't we like to do that too? Don't we like to kind of eavesdrop if our friends are saying nice things about us? Not if they're saying mean things about us, but if they're saying nice things about us. So Krishna likes to do that too. And sometimes when Krishna is not apparent to us, when we don't feel his presence, it's because he wants to see what we say when he's not around. And then we say nice things. He's very pleased. And of course, the top pastime of Radharani with Krishna, the Rasa-lila. This is from Ananda Vrindavan Tampu. Nice quote from the Nectar Devotion when one of Radharani's friends says to Radharani, why should you be bashful about around Krishna? You've already given him yourself. If you sold the elephant, you don't argue about the price of the stick used to control the elephant. And I think that this applies so much to ourselves. You know, we come and we say, yes, I surrender to you, Krishna. I surrender to you, Śrīla Prabhupāda. I'm going to give you everything. And then we waste decades arguing about surrendering very little and insignificant things. Krishna, I want to keep this little attachment and that little attachment and this little attachment and this little. He's like, you know, you've already given me the elephant. Why are you arguing about the stick used to control the elephant? And just give the whole thing. Now, everyone in Vrindavan has the mood of bringing Radha and Krishna together. This is not simply for the gopis, but this is the general mood in Vrindavan. And this is, of course, also how we take shelter of Radharani, is we try to unite the Lord and his pleasure energy. So we see whether it's the cowherd boys, whether it's the trees, the animals, the elderly gopas and gopis. Everybody is engaged in trying to... What was that? Why did it just go off? I do not know what happened to my computer. Sorry. Somehow it decided that it was going to die on me. So everyone is engaged in that business of serving Radha and Krishna. It's not simply the business of some of the residents of Vrindavan. In fact, this mood, of course, of uniting the Lord with his pleasure energy is there even in Vaikuntha with Lakshmi Narayan. It's there even in Ayodhya with Hanuman, who wants to bring together Sita and Ram. Again, I am sorry, I don't know why I did this. Technology sometimes doesn't behave the way you want it to behave. At least I'm not connected here, so. That's the worst thing, huh? When you're giving a show and all of a sudden somebody contacts
you.
Hmm?
What deities are
these? Excuse me? Oh, what deities? Those are in Chennai. Chennai in South India? Okay, yes, thank you. We are back in business. Okay, so this is our general mood, and this should be our mood also, even in this world. How can I bring together Krishna and his pleasure energy? How can I please Krishna? This is also the mood of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani. Somehow or other, how can I please Krishna? Of course, we can meditate also on Radharani's wonderful features, which attract Krishna. Now, this beauty isn't like some ordinary mundane beauty of flesh and blood, but the beauty of Radharani is the embodiment or the personification of love. Love is a very beautiful thing. When one has love, even in this world, even in this body, when we start experiencing some love for Krishna, then we also appear beautiful. Maybe not in the technical sense, but that beauty shines through. Just like Srila Prabhupada, although, you know, externally he was an old man, it was very beautiful. He had a great beauty about him because of all of his love. And Krishna is very much appreciating this beauty of Srimati Radharani and the real beauty of the love of his devotees. And it's such beauty that one is no longer interested in ordinary, mundane beauty. So just a little summary again, that our benefits from taking shelter of Radharani are protection from fall down and intelligence, Krishna's lotus feet, perfection, and quick advancement. And our method for taking shelter is to learn about Radharani and her love from the bona fide sources, from Mahaprabhu, from the Six Goswamis, from Srila Prabhupada, to chant their names, to serve them in their deity form, to pray to her and meditate on her qualities. So this was our meditation on this verse.
Thank you.
So questions, comments, discussions? Yes.
I have two questions. One technical, that the
not about the computer question.
No. That you use the recording for what on the small part, that was that Yeshua does record this.
Did I just play just now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a the whole Bhagavad Gita. And all that, someone gave me years ago that just says South India.
Yeah, it seems to be Yeshua's. I was really looking for more of the recordings.
I have the whole Bhagavad Gita. So I have, you know, Prabhupada reciting the Bhagavad Gita. I don't think that there's every verse. It's most verses of the Bhagavad Gita. And then I have this recitation that it just says South India. I like to collect things, so I have all kinds of pictures and audio and.
Can I?
Of course. Okay. No problem.
And
I have my informal title is Cosmic Librarian, so you're welcome to share whatever I have.
Thank you. And the other question was about that quote from Narottam Das Thakur's Prabhupada just basically paraphrase
the song of Narottama Das Thakur.
So I was just wondering what would be the objection.
Well, the objection is the people make is the order. So Prabhupada saying first Lord Chaitanya, then Lord Nityananda, then the six Goswamis, then Radha and Krishna. So a lot of people will say, well, wait a minute, don't you first approach the six Goswamis, then Lord Nityananda, then Lord Chaitanya? Or don't you first approach Lord Nityananda, then Lord Chaitanya, then the six Goswamis? Because the order is given differently in different places. And what I've seen practically is that there isn't one size fits all formula for everybody. It's just not how it works. It's just not how it works.
Well, there is a very clear logic in this order as well.
Well, there's a clear logic to the various orders. So different people may end up going in different ways. But certainly this logic also works. And I like that particular quote, because it's very simple and very accessible. I think anybody can understand, and anybody can do. If you say, first take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, oh, that's easy. Just chant Hare Krishna, distribute prasadam, help one other person to become a devotee. You know, it's a very easy thing. It's not something strange or esoteric. Whereas sometimes with the other, it's a little, you know, well, what exactly does that mean? Well, what do I do? And you know, what do I do in the next hour? And you're a little lost. Like you were saying, you want it to be both interesting and useful. So I'm personally a fan of the interesting and useful, and I have no patience for the, you know, pie in the sky theoretical. It's like, okay, that sounds great, but what does it mean, and how do I apply it? So this is really practical. Then Lord Nityananda is pleased, and he says, oh, you're serving my friend. You're serving my master. You're pleasing my master. Okay, I'll come help you out. And I'll free you from material desires. It's, if we can relate that to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's descriptions of the demons in Vrindavan. And he says that Krishna kills all the demons except for, what demons does Balaram kill? Yes.
Pralamba
and Danika. And they represent passion and ignorance. I think Danika ignorance and Pralamba passion. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one of the secrets of Raj Bhakti is that those two demons of passion and ignorance have to be destroyed by the practitioner themselves under the shelter of Balaram, who's the supreme guru. So you can get rid of specific demons, you know, the false guru and sectarian fighting and things like that. But when it comes to taking shelter of passion and ignorance, we really have to decide, right? We were talking this morning about how all of our suffering is due to our own desires. You know, we really have to decide, this is not what I want anymore. And there's nobody and nothing that makes that decision for us. We really need to make that decision. Now that decision is made very much with the help of Guru. There's one place where Prabhupada says, Guru is not a particular man, Guru is a truth. And whoever is teaching that truth is Guru. So of course, that the ultimate Guru is Lord Nityananda. And once we decide, I really want to be done with this passion ignorance thing, then the Guru gives us guidance and destroys those material desires. At which time we can really enter into the books of the Goswamis, and we can really enter into the mood of the Goswamis, and then we can enter into Vrindavan. One point I should make there is that when Prabhupada talks about being free of all material desires, by the way, he's not talking about 100%. He's not talking about 100%. In fact, Prabhupada puts it at 50%. If you look at Madhurya Kadambini, it looks like it's 40%. So when 50% of the anartas are removed, one can start practicing entering into the Vrindavan mood. And that entering into the Vrindavan mood then destroys the rest of the material desires, which are not gone until prema. Does that answer your technical questions?
Yeah. Actually, there are two purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila where Srila Prabhupada explained that this is the specific order in which one advances.
The same order.
Yeah, the same order.
The same one. So, but sometimes it is explained differently in different places.
Yeah, because when we come by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, then we are introduced to Lord Nityananda, spiritual master, then we learn about Sri Goswami and the teachers. So it's a natural order in which it's happening.
Of course, in one sense, they're all taking place simultaneously. I mean, we're distributing nectar devotion on the street, at least we used to. We used to distribute all of Chaitanya Charitamrita on the street. I mean, Anchalila Volume 5, we were distributing on the street. You know, sometimes devotees say to me, do I absolutely have to read Bhagavad Gita first, and then the whole Bhagavatam, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know? And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, I used to go to the airport and hand out Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila 5 to ordinary people, you know, flying to Miami, so. Which I think that's the most esoteric and of all of Srila Prabhupada's writing is the end of Anchalila. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Can I ask you a personal question?
I might not answer, but you could ask.
Because he was fortunate to have a personal association with Srila Prabhupada. So all his qualities, who would say there's one quality you really like most, or was that's my favorite quality of Srila Prabhupada?
What you see is what you get. Very authentic, no pretense. Prabhupada wasn't trying to impress anybody. All Prabhupada wanted to do was benefit people. And it was very obvious. And the first time we had a personal exchange with Srila Prabhupada, it was rather brief. My father, my husband, and I were all in Prabhupada's room for, I don't know, it wasn't more than 40 minutes. And the first part was taken up with Prabhupada talking to a reporter. So, I mean, we weren't talking to him very long. 15 minutes, maybe? 20? It wasn't a long time. And there wasn't that much apparent substance in the exchange. I mean, it really was rather a deep exchange, if you thought about it later. But it seemed rather simple. And when we walked out of the room, my father looked at me and says, now I know why you've come to this movement. That is a genuine holy man. So how could he discern that? What is going on with my computer? How could he discern that, you know, in 40 minutes? What was it happening in 40 minutes that my father would come to that conclusion that this is a genuine holy man? And I think it was really just Prabhupada's very much transparent simplicity. There was no There was no guile, there was no pretense, there was... It was so funny when Prabhupada had a vyasa, a small vyasa san, and in front of their table, and in front of there was a cushion, and Prabhupada was sitting in front of the table on the cushion. And the reporter said, "So why did your disciples pick you up at the airport in a fancy car?" And Prabhupada was, because he was very casual, he was just kind of leaning back, you know, and smiling. He said, "Yes, I knew you were envious. That's why I didn't sit on my seat." And he was just very, I would call it almost childlike. In his, you know, just like little children, they're not pretentious. They're just there. They're just, that's one of the things we like about very young children. They're just very open. They're just very honest. You know, I remember when my youngest son was about 3 or 4 years old, and we were in Govinda's in Detroit, and he went up to one of the customers, and he said, "I'm wearing new underwear and new socks." You know, that kind of openness of a child. And Prabhupada was very much like that. He was very authentic. You know, he was a very sober, mature, responsible person. He wasn't childish. But, I mean, who talks like that? Who says, "Yeah, I knew you were envious, that's why I'm sitting here." But, and people wouldn't get offended. You know, if I said that, people would be offended. "What are you saying?" Because when a person has false ego, there's this aggression. There's this underlying subtext of, "I'm better than you." When a person doesn't have any false ego, there's none of this, "I'm better than you." You're not proving anything. You're not trying to prove that you're great. You're not trying to prove other people are awful and that you're right and everyone else is wrong. You know, it's interesting because when those of us who have false ego, when we take Prabhupada's teachings and we take Krishna's teachings, we often apply them that way. "I'm a spiritual person. Look at you, materialist. I'm right and you're wrong." And even among the devotees, we get like that. "My understanding of Prabhupada's books is right and your understanding is wrong." But Prabhupada, he just didn't have any of that. It wasn't there. Prabhupada wasn't trying to prove that he was right and anybody else was wrong. He was just trying to get people to be happy by loving Krishna. And if that meant telling them they were a fool, so be it. And I mean, when he first started talking to my father, he was telling the story of Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. You know, he was calling my father a demon, basically. But my father wasn't offended. He wasn't offended. Ravindra Shrupabhu tells that a similar story, that Prabhupada called his father a fool and his father wasn't offended. How is that possible? Because even an ordinary person, they could pick up that this person didn't have an agenda. I wasn't there, but there was one time when Prabhupada was walking with the devotees and some dogs came, and Prabhupada says, "Yes, they know we are Vaishnavas, so they have come to take shelter." So I think that was what the quality that impressed me the most. That complete authenticity. Because you just don't find that. Anyone who's conditioned has some agenda. They're not being completely open and honest with you. There's some pretense, there's some ulterior motive. there's something there about them. It just wasn't there. He was just your friend. Just your friend and your well-wisher, honestly so. Imagine a whole world like that. Imagine a whole world like that, where everybody's like that. Where everybody's honestly your friend. Nobody has any ego agenda at all. That if people in Goloka Vrindavan, they insult each other out of love and affection, out of intimacy. Oh, Krishna, you naughty boy stealing the butter, how are you going to grow up to be a gentleman? Krishna, you didn't lift Govardhan Hill, I did it with my mantras, or whatever, you know, so they joke with each other like that, but there's... Nobody's trying to prove that they're right and everyone else is wrong and they're better and everyone else is bad and just see how great I am. And there's none of that. You know, and we want that, but we don't want to give it up in ourselves. We would all like to be in a place where there were billions and billions and billions of people and animals and trees and we're all conscious and we all had that mood. But, you know, we don't want to leave our own mood at the door. Is that all right? And then we wonder why they're not letting us in. Saying sorry. Anything else? Yes.
What you told me was mostly searching after Krishna, but very rarely, I guess, he was searching for. I don't understand it really. Gopi, who was saying or meditating on Gopi, but it's very insignificantly explained, or I just don't know.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Yeah, because we should follow Lord Chaitanya, and he is searching after Krishna.
Not searching after the gopis.
Yeah, and not after.
Well, of course, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Radharani. But he's in the mood of Radharani searching for Krishna. Yes, but we should follow him in the sense that we also have that mood of compassion. If you look for Radharani independent of Krishna, you're not going to get Radharani at all. You're going to get Durga. We don't worship Radharani separate from Krishna. We're not Shaktas. As soon as you try to worship Radharani separate from Krishna, there are liberated souls who are more attached to Radha than to Krishna. There are some gopis who are more attached to Radha than to Krishna. But they're also attached to Krishna. It's not that they're not attached to Krishna. They're not worshipping Radharani separately from Krishna. Does that answer your question? But Lord Chaitanya was interested in the gopis. Ramananda Roy is Vishakha and Swarup Damodar is Lalita. So he was taking their companionship to enter more deeply into Radharani's mood. And Gadadhar is Radharani. But Radharani in another mood, Radharani in a submissive mood, helping Krishna to understand her own mood. Is that all right? Anybody else?
Maybe the question was about the and yes. Interrogated.
The student accused him, why are you chanting the names of the gopis? Why don't you chant the names of Krishna? Anyway, we chant the names of the gopis. We have so many songs with the names of the gopis. Yes? So many of the songs of the acharyas. Prabhupada said our japa beads you can understand as the 180 Upanishads or the 108 principal gopis. So you can be chanting on your japa beads and meditating, you know, Lalita, Vishaka, Palika, Tarika. Please give me service to Krishna. Although I haven't been able to find a list of the names of the 108 chief gopis. I've looked. There's a list of the 8 chief gopis. Anybody know who the 8 chief gopis are?
The ones on the altar in Mayapur?
Nope. Well, there's 3 of them. 3 of the 8 chief gopis are on the altar in Mayapur. But not the other 5. Anybody know the 8 chief gopis? Okay, well, you all know 3 of them.
Lalita, Vishaka,
and Radharani. Okay. So then who's the 2nd chief gopi?
Chandravali.
And who are her 2 friends? Her 2 chief friends, like Lalita and Vishaka. Who are Chandravali's Lalita and Vishaka? Padma and Saibya. And then there's one of the gopis who's in charge of her own group, but she's friendly to Radharani, that's Shamala. She's friendly to Radharani and neutral to Chandravali. And then there's Bhadra, who's friendly to Chandravali and neutral to Radharani. So those are your 8 chief gopis. Radharani, Chandravali, Shamala, and Bhadra, Lalita, Vishaka, Padma, and Saibya. And then if you look, you can find more, you get like to the 10 and you get Gopali and Palika, Tarika. And Rupa Goswami mentions some of these also. But I haven't found any list of 108. But at least you can just think, oh Gopi, oh Gopi, oh Gopi. Did you see me, Krishna? Oh, the Rupa Goswami does give many, many, many lists of many different gopis, but he doesn't put them in that chief category like that. Anybody else? Okay, everybody ready to take shelter of Radharani?
Yes.
Okay. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.